1999. The programs got started in 2001, so we've been up and operating for 6 years, and the program was expanded and strengthened last year. In terms of the renewable energy program, what we try to do is sort of a two-phase approach. First, we try to assist customers by simplifying the process of installing a solar system on their house. We do that by providing information, education, training, technical assistance, and financial incentives. On the supply side, what we're trying to do is to create a mature supply side supply chain to get businesses delivering solar services and products to customers. We do that through offering grants, through leads, through marketing, and other activities with the businesses. One way we do this is we've got an 800 number, and let me say what that 800
number
is.
Yeah, give that.
Yeah, it's 1-800-762-7077. And that's really the clearinghouse for all of our products and services for Focus on Energy, not just renewables, but energy efficiency as well.
So that's 1-800-762-7077, correct?
Right, right. So we have a plethora of fact sheets, case studies, lists of installers for folks trying to figure out how to put solar on their businesses, on their homes, on their farms. A lot of times we find that the customers have a lot of questions. They don't really know what the technologies are. They don't know how they work. They don't know how much they cost. They don't know what type of permits they need. And so what we're trying to do is to overcome all of those problems by simplifying it and coming up with the answers.
Certainly want to give people a chance to join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call if you have some questions. Julia, you talked about at the conference, the climate for a greater effort in the solar energy field. What's that climate like?
Well, the industry is growing just at a really remarkable rate, and it has been actually for the past few years. The industry itself is growing anywhere between 30 and 40% per year, which is really quite amazing for any industry. So, the markets all over the country are really beginning to pick up steam. A lot of that has to do with there is a federal tax incentive or a tax incentive credit available to both homeowners and business owners. For homeowners, currently, that federal tax incentive, it's a $2,000 credit. And for businesses, it's up to 30% of the cost of the system. So that credit currently is available and is set to expire at the end of 2008, but those in the industry who are working with Capitol Hill and Congress are really working hard to get that extended beyond. But so that federal incentive has been really useful in helping both home and business owners across the country make solar more financially feasible for them. And then on the state level, programs like you have in Wisconsin are really what is the driving force behind the growth in the industry. The federal incentive, at least on the homeowner, the residential side of things, is relatively small in regards to the overall system cost. So it really is important to have programs like what they have with Focus on Energy, where the state also adds dollars that you can add on top of that federal tax credit to really make it a feasible option for your home or business.
Yeah. And Don Wickard, there's been a fair amount of interest in this program.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. From our perspective, we've had the number of solar electric installations that we've had in the past 2 years have doubled each of the last 2 years,
wow.
And we expect them to double again. Now, unfortunately, we started out with a fairly small base,
right.
So we've got a long way to go. And during the conference, Julia put up a slide showing the top 10 states, I think, in solar electric. And unfortunately, we were not listed there. So we've got a ways to go. I think we've got a really good program that's trying to address the barriers that I mentioned before. So I think we're going to be up there in the top 10 soon.
Yeah, and one of the things in that slide that Don mentioned is, I think it is important to sort of, from a national perspective, understand what's happening. And again, I really mentioned that it's state policy that is driving activity across the U.S. And right now, more than 70% of all solar installations in the U.S. are in California. 18% are in New Jersey, and that leaves a very small percentage of the rest of the company that's split up amongst all of the other states. So California by far has the strongest policies and markets in place that really are allowing people to get these installations on their homes and businesses. New Jersey also has a strong program, but obviously it's also a much smaller state. So California by far the leader, New Jersey with a distant second, and then everybody else is growing quickly, but as Don mentioned, has a long way to go to catch up.
Well, California, too, has kind of a climate that might be a little better for it than perhaps some of our Midwestern states. Maybe not. But
Don, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, let me jump in here. You know, it's interesting to notice worldwide where the most solar installations are. And by far, the most installations are in Germany.
Germany, is that right?
Germany has 8 times the number of solar electric installations than we do here in the United States, and they actually have a solar resource much worse than Wisconsin's. It was compared to Alaska during the conference. So I think it says a lot about if you put the right policies in place, you can get installations. And the other thing that's done for Germany, it's created this huge solar industry there that I saw where they had 27,000 jobs related just to the solar industry in terms of manufacturing, distribution, and installation. We're probably less than 200 here in Wisconsin.
Mm. Well, we have a number of people to visit with you, so let's go to the phones. Eugene and Baraboo, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello, good morning.
Morning.
One thing I wanted to comment upon is that, with the conversations about renewable energies, and especially in the electrical field, one thing that's never brought up is the fact that the conventional electric delivery systems will never be and cannot be replaced. And as we shift to alternative uses, which I'm in favor of, the costs of the conventional systems have to increase because of the lack of utilization. But those systems have to be there as backup in case weather-related problems develop. I'm a farmer, and I know what weather can do expectedly or unexpectedly.
Yeah.
And people don't realize that it's not a replacement for conventional electrical generation and transmission and delivery. It's supplementary. Is that? And I'll go off the air and listen to comments.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Eugene. Julia, you would start with you?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think it is an excellent point. A lot of people, when they think about solar, tend to assume that means if you install a solar installation that you're going off the grid, off the traditional electric utility grid, and that you're not getting a bill from your utility anymore. But really, in most cases, that's not the situation. There are a lot of people who live in very rural areas where there are not easy access to power lines. And for those people, it does make sense to have an off-grid solar system. But the majority of solar installations in the U.S. are actually grid-tied. And what that means is that if a homeowner installs a system on their home, they're still connected to the utility grid, and they're getting power from their solar system during the day. But at night, when the sun isn't shining or when there's a storm and it's raining and there isn't any sun, you're still connected to the electric utility. And so he's right that in most cases, solar and other distributed resource technologies are not a complete replacement for the existing electricity grid.
Yeah.
Really, they're a supplement to it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, we actually, my organization puts on the largest national solar conference in here in the U.S., and this year we had over 12,000 people. But one of the really interesting sessions that we had was a CEO panel, and it was 6 CEOs from 6 of the largest solar manufacturers around the world. And what I found really interesting was that they, when they were asked, well, what percentage of the electricity can solar really ever provide for the world? Right now in the U.S., it's less than 1%. It's not even, it's something closer to like 0.2%, which is obviously very small. And what all of those CEOs commented to when asked that question is that really we're asking the wrong question. The question is not what is the total electricity, what's the total percentage of electricity that solar can provide, but really the better question is what's the total of the incremental addition of electricity that solar can provide. So as demand for electricity increases around the world, solar, you know, isn't trying to necessarily replace all of the existing coal plants and, and all the other generation sources. What it really can do is solar can provide, you know, the new generation that's needed and really help us prevent having to build new coal plants.
Makes sense. Thank you very much for the comments and for the call. Diana in Plover, it's your turn. Hi, Diana. Thanks for waiting.
Hello. I'm calling about solar domestic hot water. And we'll go to an on-demand system. As a middle-income family, we can absorb that higher cost than a traditional system. But when we were looking for the solar domestic hot water heater, the payback time we had a site assessment, was given to us to be estimated at 10 years. And so for a middle-income family, can you make some suggestions? Because the initial outlay to look 10 years down the road, even given state and the federal tax credits and everything and the state incentives, it's just daunting to go into your savings that deep and have to look 10 years out. So if you have some other suggestions that might be doable for a family in our situation, we want to be supportive of renewable energy. We're real close to Amherst here. But it's just a significant investment financially.
Well, Don Wicker, let's turn to you. Hi, Don. Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, I would say 10 years is in the ballpark of typically what we'll see for solar domestic hot water systems. A lot of times people look at other reasons to put in the system other than just payback. Now, a 10-year payback is a 10% return, which because it's fixed and because it's long-term, it's probably not a bad investment. Other reasons to do it is for the environmental concerns, because you want to show your neighbors what you're doing, things like that. So, you know, we're always hoping that prices will go down in the future. I think with solar domestic hot water, we really haven't seen that. If anything, they seem to be going up as the prices of copper have gone up, the prices of aluminum have gone up, the prices of labor have gone up. So it's pretty difficult to see that those prices are going down. On the solar electric side, you know, as we look towards new developing radical technologies, there is the potential for those prices to go down. But typically, the cost of a PV system, solar electric, is going to be about twice that of the solar hot water. So even though 10 years may seem like a long time, if you're looking at solar electric, it's probably going to be more than 10 years.
Mm. Julia, a comment from you?
I would say the only thing I would add is you really do have to look at it as investment in an asset. Mm-hmm. Maybe looking at the payback, you know, when you choose what car you're going to purchase, you don't necessarily look at, well, what's the payback of that car? You're looking at, what's the value that car is providing to me? You know, it's going to get me where I need to go. It's going to look nice, and my neighbors are going to say, wow, what a nice car you have. You know, there are all these other values that products provide other than payback. And so it's interesting that people always ask that payback question about solar, when there are very few other items that a consumer purchases that they ask that question about. So, as Don mentioned, there are other values that solar provides that you really need to take into consideration when deciding whether or not it's worth it for you to make that purchase.
I have a question for you, too. Now, once the 10 years is gone by, Don, that solar heater is still there.
Yeah, it's still there. Yeah, and, you know, we really don't know how long some of these devices can last. The ones that were put in the 80s, if they were installed correctly and well maintained, they're still happily churning out hot water every day. And the same way with solar electric systems, we're seeing warranties on these panels of up to 25 years, which mean they could last 50 years or longer. The other thing that I remember Julia saying at the conference was there's been recent information on property values of solar.
I was going to bring that up.
Solar collectors that we're actually finding that people are getting their money back when they sell the home. So, you know, the payback is almost instantaneous if you look at it that way.
Yeah.
That if you spend $10,000, you're going to get $10,000 more for your house.
Right. And a lot of that is an education process with people. You know, the statistics that I had talked about at the conference were the studies that have been done are specific to California, where generally consumers are a little more educated about solar and you know what it is, how it works, what the value is. So, you know, I don't want to say for certain that those numbers are necessarily directly applicable to Wisconsin, but I would hope as consumers do become more and more environmentally conscious and and understand the technologies that, it might not be a direct one-to-one ratio, but the addition of solar technology to a home should, to some degree, increase the value of the property. Mm.
Thanks again, Diana, for calling. Don Wickert, director of the Renewable Energy Program of Focus on Energy, one of our guests. The other, Julia Hamm, executive director of the Solar Electric Power Association. She's located in Washington, D.C. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking solar energy today with Don Wickert from the Focus on Energy Program, Julia Hamm, executive director of the Solar Electric Power Association, Larry Mueller here. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Lenore in Plover is next. Lenore, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just thought people might be interested in hearing from someone that has solar. We built our solar home 25 years ago, which I guess we were one of the early ones in the area, and we absolutely love it. If we ever built again, which we're not planning on it, we would not go without solar. It's wonderful.
Now, do you have solar? What's your solar status? Do you have hot water? Do you have?
What we did was we checked all over the nation to see what was available, and we went with the simplest way we could. Basically, when we built it, the front part of it to the south. We blocked that off and insulated it heavy and painted it a special color. And then we put up the solar glass. And we have a thermostat and a fan, and that is it. And I heat my house a good percentage of the time with that, and all I'm using is a fan and a thermostat. It's wonderful.
Well, Don, sounds like a satisfied customer there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, actually, you know, the simplest systems are probably the best. And passive solar sounds like this is almost like a passive solar system.
Passive solar.
Where basically you put windows on the south side and collect the sun. And, I mean, the nice thing about that for Wisconsin here is we have a huge heat needs in the winter, and the sun is low, and so it penetrates vertical glass very well in the winter. So it's a nice system. That there's not many moving parts, and as she said, it lasts a long time.
Yeah, thanks, Lenore. Appreciate it. Joe and Kadat, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I've been living in solar energy now for the last 2 years. We're total off-grid, and I love it. And there's only one problem I have, or a question, I guess, is the co-ops. Are not able to come up with any plan for any grants or anything, and I just wondered what's the reasoning, or what, aren't they educated, or what?
Well, Don, what about it?
Well, when we passed the law in 1999, one of the compromises that was made to establish the statewide program was to give the co-ops and the municipal utilities the option of either opting into the Focus on Energy program or having programs themselves. So each customer has a $6 per meter per year. So 50 cents a month that they put into a fund, which is supposed to support projects like the ones we have in Focus on Energy, or they left it up to the co-ops to develop something else. So some of the co-op programs include tree planting programs, mm-hmm. and other things like that. So it's still up to the co-ops to join Focus or the municipals. And actually, this year, we've had a lot of new co-ops join and municipals joining Focus. So we're becoming almost a total statewide program, but there are still a few, like perhaps Joe's, that have not yet joined.
So Joe or any customer of a co-op like that, I guess the best thing to do would be to mm-hmm. talk to the co-op about it and
yeah.
find out. Why or if not mm-hmm. Joining, what programs are available?
Yeah, well, one of the comment I might make is Joe, I think, said he was off-grid now,
yes.
which means that he's not paying a utility bill. And mm-hmm. and for us, you need to pay in to get money back. So even if Joe was in one of our participating utility territories, if he was off-grid, he would not be eligible, because in order to get something back, you have to put something in.
Okay. Thanks, Joe. Rick in Jackson, your turn. Hi, Rick.
Hi. I have a couple of questions. One, about the energy loss, if you were converting DC to AC, why aren't we using more DC utilities in the house or around different places? And secondly, I have found a solar concentrator, they called it, on the Internet that you're supposed to be able to build for under $1,000. It puts out 6,000 watts and generates temperatures up to 1,200 degrees. Are these available, or are they scams, or what?
Well, let's turn to Julia. Do you have any idea on that?
Well, you know, I'm going to let Don take a stab at the first question. I actually am not a very technical person myself, so when it comes to DCAC wash, I'm not a good one to answer. But in terms of the concentrating PV systems, we are seeing more and more concentrators, more and more companies in the industry that are developing concentrating technology. But to be honest, I would be somewhat hesitant to purchase a system like that yourself over the Internet. The technology is, in the greater scheme of solar technologies, the concentrating technology products that are we're starting to see developed are relatively new in the overall scheme of things. So, and again, especially with a technology like that, you're talking about the really high temperatures. In terms of do-it-yourself, I'd be careful in getting into that.
Hmm. And, Don, what do you think about this, the DC to AC, the question mm-hmm. there about why don't we have more appliances that are DC as opposed to AC?
Mm-hmm. Well, there just is not the huge demand for DC. And because there's not a huge demand, across the world, there's a very limited number of appliances available. So that's why folks who want to go off-grid have really chosen to get an inverter, which switches the DC, which comes off of the solar electric panel, to AC, so they can use the regular appliances. There are some available, like they have them on boats. Mm-hmm. Most of those systems are DC, so it is possible to find those, though they're not readily available. Also, on the solar concentrator, I'd be really careful about that. The numbers that the caller mentioned, I think he said 6 kilowatts for $1,200. I would say that's almost impossible to do. So I'd be very careful about that. Also, for our climate, the solar concentrator isn't a really good technology. That's a better technology for what we call direct beam radiation, which is prevalent in the Southwest, in New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado, parts of California. And that's where you're seeing systems like this go in. Then they basically turn water or some other liquid into a steam. So there's a whole steam process. It gets pretty complicated.
Mm. Kurt in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Kurt.
Good morning, everybody. Kurt, Hot Water Products, and we became a full-fledged distributor of solar thermal products about 14 months ago here in Wisconsin. And we're happy to say that by the end of the year, we'll have about 30,000 square feet of collectors on roofs or in ground mount systems. And just this past week, we got commitments from three more businesses. We see the bigger part of the growth in solar thermal on the commercial industrial side, where a lot of consumers or a lot of customers, clients are forcing them to do something green. As an example, and I'm sure that and very much enjoy the press. The Wigwam Mills in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, a third-generation process company, just committed this past week to putting a solar thermal preheat system in their facility. And they wanted to have press releases in 20 trade magazines because their clients are asking them to do something green and renewable. So we see a huge growth in our business, just on the solar thermal side. And I think Don made a great point earlier that at the conference it was mentioned that the payback is somewhat immediate on the residential side, although we don't see a whole lot happening on the residential side because of the cash outlay initially. The payback is almost immediately. And those that...
on the business side, you're saying?
On the residential side, I'm saying because of the it's an appreciating asset versus a depreciation, like a vehicle that was spoken about earlier. So we see a huge upside to all this. Focus on Energy has been a tremendous asset to the consumers out there, and The growth is, I don't see any limit to it at this point.
Yeah. Well, Kurt, thanks for calling, and I guess I'll turn to Don for a comment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Kurt is exactly right. We see a huge market potential, especially in the non-residential commercial industrial applications of solar water heating. One of the reasons why it's really taking off right now is the federal credits, the tax yeah. credits. Not only is there the 30% with no upper limit, there's also a five-year accelerated depreciation credit. And you put those two together, and the feds are going to be able to, depending on your tax rate, supply over 50% of the cost of a system. And on top of that, the focus incentives are about 25%. The other thing I want to mention is Kurt mentioned that they hope to install 35,000 square feet of solar collectors this year, I believe. One of our speakers at the conference last week was Ole Pilgaard, mm-hmm. and he was the executive director of the European Solar Thermal Association, and they're just going, there huge amounts of solar systems are being installed in Europe, and he gave us sort of a challenge, and he was saying, what you need to do here in Wisconsin is come up with some fairly aggressive targets, and so he gave a minimum target and a maximum target, and his minimum target for Wisconsin was 14 million square feet of solar collectors installed for water heating per year. So Kurt is saying his company, and his company is one of the major ones in the state, it hopes to do 35,000. Ole's saying we should be up at 14 million. So there's a huge potential out there.
Well, Kurt, you may not be able to put up 14 million. He's going to get laughing about that.
I'm sure
that,
he'd love to.
Yeah. But I'm sure he'd love to. I think that's right, Julia. What about it nationally? Any figures nationally on that?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that Kurt mentioned that they're really seeing this significant increase in commercial installations, because that is the same national trend that we're seeing not only with solar hot water or solar thermal, but also with solar electric. Last year in 2006 actually was the first year where we saw in the U.S. market commercial installations, that market growing faster than residential installations. And I think Kurt is exactly right that there's just this increased awareness about the environment and climate change, and customers are beginning to demand it of the businesses that they are frequenting.
Yeah. Well, Kurt, thank you again very much for calling. Good luck with your business. Appreciate it. Mike and Amory, it's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have basically a comment and a question. First, my comment is, something that many people do not understand or have never heard before is that all energy comes from the sun, whether it be coal or oil or geothermal. It all is driven by the sun. So, you know, and the one exception is nuclear. So it makes sense to try to harness the energy from the sun and get that energy directly instead of through secondary means, you know, such as coal or oil or some other type of source. And my question is, the current technology for photovoltaics seems to be at a certain point where, just around the corner, it's going to evolve into something new, something more efficient. Now, if a person is considering purchasing a PV system for their home, which is my understanding might cost $20,000 to $25,000, depending on the size of the home, should a person wait until the technology takes the next step, or would it make sense to just go ahead and buy something now?
Yeah, that's a question we always have on everything from digital TVs to cars to everything else, Don.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. You know, I've been in the renewable energy business for 25 years, and I've heard of these spectacular breakthroughs that could occur next year for just
25
about,
years.
For 25 years. So, you know, we have seen incremental gains, and I think what we are seeing is installers being more professional, being now certified. We're seeing products with longer warranties. We're finding out that people value the systems more, so the payback is actually dropping. And so, you know, my suggestion would be to go ahead now if you really want to do it, and just to, you know, get a number of bids, do a site assessment with the Focus on Energy program, and try to get your best deal right now, because you really never know what's going to happen in the future. I don't know, Julia?
Yeah, no, I completely concur with Don's assessment. You know, our industry really is about incremental improvements. That's the way this industry has been growing so quickly is the manufacturers of the technology that have been in the industry and in the marketplace, had products on the market for many, many years now, each year make good incremental improvements to their product. These manufacturers are putting out higher efficiency cells every year. Like Don said, the installers are getting better training and they're learning how to decrease the amount of time and cost that's required for them to do the installation. So that really is what we need to focus on. Yes, there's great research being done. There are some really innovative companies that are trying to make major breakthroughs, but like Don said, you know, that's always the case, and we really can't rely on. There's a lot of buzz in the industry, or not even in the industry, a lot of buzz about the industry, especially with the investment community. We have a significant amount of venture capital money going into startup solar companies right now. And, you know, we've already seen over the past couple of years a lot of the initial hype about how quickly these companies were going to be able to bring their technology to market. We've seen that it takes a lot longer than they're initially stating. And so, you know, I think that for a consumer, it really is not in your best interest to wait for something major to happen.
Thanks, Mike, for calling. Appreciate it. Andy in Madison, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Andy.
Hi there. Wonderful program.
Thank you.
I just had a quick question. I was wondering whether to go with solar or wind, and I'm having problems. I was wondering, what are the advantages of solar power over going with a new renewable wind energy?
Well, we offer a wind program through Focus on Energy, too, focused on customer applications of wind, so not necessarily wind farms. And I think wind makes sense for a certain fairly select group of people in Wisconsin right now. Those that have a very good wind resource, and, you know, it's very, very site-specific on how good your wind resource is. Also those that, have at least 10 acres of land. You know, wind is not a technology you should be considering if you're living in the city right now.
No.
And even if you have neighbors that, you know, are fairly close to you. Frankly, we're having a fairly difficult time with our wind program now due to a lot of restrictions from the county, from townships, neighbors getting upset about it. Also, there is some maintenance with wind turbines. Each year, you've got to go either up there and grease the bearings, change the oil, or you've got to pull the thing down. So, you know, as opposed to like a solar electric system, with those, or a solar water heating system, basically you can put those up and kind of forget about them for, I would say, close to 5 years. And with a PV system, it could be 10 to 15 years, where basically there's no maintenance whatsoever. So, you know, right now I think that a certain type of person needs to be involved with wind. And whereas I think with solar technologies, it's much more ubiquitous.
Okay. Thanks for calling, Andy. Pete in La Crosse. Hi to you.
Morning, Larry and guests. The point I want to make is not made nearly often enough, and that is that, you know, people look at PV panels and say, oh my gosh, that's so expensive. And we know that these sell for about $5 a watt. But solar hot water panels are about $1 a watt, and for a much smaller investment, people can be making an equivalent dollar dent into their energy bill and an equivalent dent into their CO2 footprint. But for some reason, solar hot water systems just aren't glamorous enough. And if I had to say so, people who call about PV systems shouldn't even be talked to until they have the solar hot water in place, because for an investment of maybe a tenth to a quarter as much, they can be doing just as much good.
Hmm. Julia, comment?
Well, you know, I think I'll let Don reply to that. You know, our organization works specifically with solar electric technologies, so we don't really get involved with solar hot water. So, and, you know, we certainly appreciate them both, but
yeah, okay.
Well, then expertise.
All right, I'll let Don go ahead.
Okay. Well, I think the caller has a point that solar water heating systems are typically about three times more efficient for each square foot of collector surface. You're going to be able to derive, for a solar water heating system, it's going to be about 50%. For a solar electric system, it's, the efficiency is about 15% for a silicon technology. So you are able to capture more of the solar radiation through solar hot water, and there is a cost differential as well. So I would say on a cost percentage basis, perhaps solar thermal is a slightly better option. However, you know, we really push both because we think there, you know, people use hot water and they use electricity. So if you're trying to do the right thing, I think you should do get involved in both of them. The costs that the caller had were a little bit low, I think. Typically, it's $8 a watt is what we're seeing for solar electric, and typically maybe a hot water system might be about half that.
About half that. Okay. Thanks, Pete, for calling. Paul in Whitewater, it's your turn. Hi, Paul.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning to your guests. 2 years ago, my wife and I looked into a BP-provided solar system for our house, solar electric, and at that time a 7-kilowatt system was running at about $50,000 without the rebates that were available at that time from the state and the federal government. At that time, the federal rebates would reduce the total cost down to about $30,000. Apparently, those rebates have gone away. Am I correct?
No. Don?
No, the incentives now are better than ever, and we're hoping that can be even better in the future, especially from the federal side. I think you said $50,000 for a seven kilowatt. Actually, that's a terrific price. That's roughly $7 per watt, and you know, we're not seeing that actually anymore. So that would have been a good price, and typically our incentives are 25% of the total cost. And unfortunately, with the feds right now, there's a limit of $2,000 for residential applications. So 30% of $50,000, is $15,000. So that's what he could have gotten had there been no limit. But right now there's a $2,000 limit. So they're hoping to change that in Congress next year.
Mm, interesting. Thanks very much for calling, Paul. And, Julia, I don't believe I mentioned your website, or had you mention your website, because people can go there and get a lot of information. What's your website?
Sure. It's www.solarelectricpower.org.
Solarelectricpower.org?
Yes.
Okay. And for Focus on Energy, Don Wickert.
Focusonenergy.com.
That's an easy one.
Yeah.
Focus on Energy. So it's solarelectricpower.org or focusonenergy.com.
You know, one thing I want to mention also, Larry, is for those who were not able to make it to the conference last week, we will have all of our presentations up on our website, I believe by tomorrow? Or maybe Friday. Yeah, solardecade.com, I believe.
Solardecade.com.
Yeah.
And I guess I'll throw out there as well, if people are looking also or are interested in a national or international perspective even, we have from our big solar event, our national solar event that took place last month, we have webcast footage that's available online at solarpowerconference.com.
Solarpowerconference.com. Yep. All right. Julia, Don, thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it very much. Don Wickert is director of the Renewable Energy Program of Focus on Energy. Julia Hamm, executive director of the Solar Electric Power Association. She works out of Washington, D.C. Well, I'll tell you what. You can put a motor on your boat, or you can get some paddles out, get your canoe out, or get your kayak out and do a little outdoor adventuring without spending a whole lot of power other than your own person power. And we'll talk about that coming up with Darren Bush, co-owner of Rutabaga of Madison. Coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.